slow healing and failures. I want to say something about cases of slow healing. If we, as practitioners, do not meet a claim in a reasonable time, or are not doing as well with the case as we would like, it might be well for us to ascertain something specific as to the nature of the claim, or learn what it is mortal mind says when it calls a disease blood pressure or whooping cough or cancer. I do not mean by this that you should have a medical diagnosis. The person who has any disease has it because of mortal mind, and never because of the human body. And mortal mind holds within itself all that the false claim is, including its name and all the beliefs connected with that name. If we need to know specifically in regard to some form of error, we should do our work thoroughly from the standpoint of divine principle and hold there, knowing that there is nothing wanting in our treatment, that our treatment is inspired of the divine mind. In this way, all that is essential will come to light, sometimes in quite an astonishing way. All that we need to know will be uncovered through the action of truth. In every case we have, we should handle the different phases that seem to come up in connection with the case. In a case of rheumatism, we handle the belief that there are other beliefs following the original claim, such as pain and stiff joints. And we should also handle the belief that there was a cause, such as a run of fever, that could produce rheumatism in the first place. If the patient comes to us the next day, after we have worked thoroughly for him, and says, "I am much worse," we should not treat rheumatism just at this time, but we should treat the belief that he is much worse, for this is the present claim. Or he might say, "This and this has occurred." Handle these phases of belief and see that they do not extend or produce other beliefs. Of course, we continue our work on the original claim until it is met. In giving a treatment, much depends on what the practitioner knows and whether his understanding is entirely free from any belief of fear. A practitioner is not always to blame if he does not heal a case, but of this we may be sure. We should not make excuses for our failures. It is much better not to say it was impossible to heal the case because he was so full of old theology. If he was full of old theology, and that was what the matter was with him, we should heal him of old theology. We sometimes hear practitioners say they could not do anything for a patient because he would not give up his drinking, or he was so stingy, or he had such an ugly disposition, or there was so much material resistance. If these were the claims, we should handle the claims and heal his beliefs. If our understanding is not sufficient to heal a case, it is much better not to make excuses or try to explain our failure. It is far better to say simply, "I'm sorry, but I didn't know enough." It may seem to take time and much patience to work out some cases, but we are to keep on, as Isaiah says, quote, "Until the cities be wasted without inhabitant," that is, until the false sense disappears, and until the mortal disappears from thought, "and the houses without man," close quote. which means until the material sense of a sick mortal disappears from thought. If a practitioner who has been faithful should lose a case, he should not condemn himself. If he consecrated himself fully to work on the case, then he should not condemn himself. Mrs. Eddy admonishes us that we should not condemn ourselves because the condemnatory thought closes the very door divine love has provided for our escape. When we seem to have this cross to bear, we have this promise. Quote, "Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from vain gossip." Close quote. That's translated from the Arabic. To be really healed, that is, to be the Christ consciousness, is something far greater and more blessed than any ease in matter. The need of this mental, spiritual, permanent healing is very great. And when we, as Christian Scientists, avail ourselves of this kind of healing, what is called physical healing will be simultaneously forthcoming. Love is the fulfilling of the law. Paul, in the 13th chapter of Romans, urges upon the church that its first duty is the consecration of Christian life and its service to mankind. This was a natural position for Paul to take in regard to one's duty, because all down the ages the thought of service has been inherent in our being. Quote, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law." Close quote. We all know that love is a holy mental, spiritual activity of mind. Love is divine mind, our mind, that thinketh no evil. Love is that quality of our own mind that is constant, unchanging, ever yearning to help and to protect others. The Bible teaches that in order to fulfill the law of love, we must bear one another's burdens. This love is not a personal mind, neither is it for a few persons, but for all men. Love is the healing Christ, and, quote, "is impartial and universal in its adaptation and bestowals," close quote. The world is beginning to see that all its troubles are mental troubles, that its diseases are not physical, but mental in nature. The world is seeing that its troubles are not so many physical ills, but so many mental mesmerisms, that we are no longer dealing with matter, but with mesmeric states of thought. As the individual and the world in general recognizes that all the inharmonies of the mind and body are mental in their nature and origin, they also realize that these inharmonies must be diagnosed mentally, and that the method of their healing must be mind healing. Since all the world's troubles are mental and must be healed through mind, and mind in its nature is love, then all healing is accomplished by loving, not condemning. According to the teachings of the Bible, We never permit our condemnation to rest upon anyone. And others' illusions or mesmerisms may seem to be many and very great in belief, but we who see as mind, as love, see their unreality and nothingness. Since the only way we can serve mankind or bear one another's burdens is to do it mentally, and since we know that suggestions or adverse thoughts tend to deplete the one who takes them in, then when we see our neighbor taking in the suggestions of sickness and lack, aren't we fulfilling the law of love when we know the unreality and nothingness of these things? It is by knowing the unreality and nothingness of any adverse thought which may be presented to our consciousness that we free both ourselves and our neighbor. By destroying these suggestions in mortal thought at the point of our own consciousness, we are helping to free all mankind. In church matters, in home relations and business affairs, if we hold to the fact of Christian Science as stated in our textbook, quote, that all in harmony of mortal mind or body is illusion, possessing neither reality nor identity, close quote, this fact, realized by us, will fulfill the law of love to our neighbor and bear his burdens. But if we fail to put this fact into operation as our thought, then we are opening our consciousness to the suggestions of mortal mind that are set out to deplete us and our neighbor. Let us be alert to recognize what mortal mind is thinking and not let its suggestions interfere with our dominion or our neighbor's. It is our duty, as set forth by Paul, to be consecrated in our service to mankind. Students, it is astonishing. When we begin to experience in Christian Science the power of love, how we readily see that Mrs. Eddy does not exaggerate when she says that love is that mind that thinketh no evil, that is not dual, the mind that is an active, conscious mode of truth. If love is understood and demonstrated, we do not doubt the outcome of anything. We need not fear that malpractice will interfere with our practice. Our practice will be all right as we individually demonstrate the love that is God. Every difficulty that we encounter, since all is mental, will fade away in that presence which is love. But that presence must be our Christ consciousness. Divine love is the one power in the universe. It will do everything. Heal the sick, save the sinner, cast out devils, help those who despair, comfort those who mourn, raise the dead, prevent dying, and establish immortality. It behooves us, as Christian Scientists, to love more all the time, and then more and more. We should not have any sentimentality about love. Just love. Be that creature that is ever kind, not only to man and woman, but to all creatures. Be that love wherein no one is condemned, wherein no one is even for a single moment shut out of the kingdom of heaven, but always established and maintained in heaven harmony. There is nothing in the whole universe in the way of evil that can withstand our understanding and demonstration of divine love. There is no evil too great or too strongly entrenched to withstand our demonstration of divine love, and no one can possibly escape the redeeming influence of that thought which is, quote, love reflected in love, close quote. The concrete evidences of divine love, expressed humanly, are pure affection, protection, provision, consideration, thoughtfulness, kindness, and above all, graciousness. Like our Master, out of the amplitude of these qualities, let us define the words divine love. That's the end of part 3 of this association address.